This is the Brain Language Podcast.
Welcome to the Brain Language Podcast, where we discuss NLP concepts to help you in your business and life. I'm Morgan Job.
And I'm Susan Stageman. And it might have seemed that I took the summer off. Well, I was out of town most of the month of June, which is why we haven't had a podcast for a while. But now I'm back with Morgan, and we're going to talk today about something that I think seems to be on a lot of people's minds. I have had a number of coaching clients that have reached out to me because some of them are older, but some of them are. Some of them are young people in their 30s. And a lot of them are doing the online dating. They're looking for, you know, someone to be in their life, to spend their life with, or to spend some time with. And it just seems like the same situations or problems keep coming up over and over again. So having been in NLP and studying human behaviors for almost 35 years, I would say, Morgan, that it's safe to say most human problems stem from other humans. Would you say that's true?
I mean, I could get in alignment with that.
What?
I could get into alignment with that.
Yes. I mean, it just seems like no matter what you do, every time you turn around, somebody's having a problem with somebody else. I just spent two long weeks, different weeks, with my husband's family and my family. And people ask me, well, how was it? I go, it was family. You know how that is. So we all deal with these little ins and outs of people's idiosyncrasies. And no matter how hard we try, there's always somebody popping up to challenge us and our model of the world. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people starting relationships, or there are people in relationships that are reaching a place where it's obvious that something has to change. And so I developed this little outline for people that I'm sharing with you today. I'm calling this Relationship 201. Now, episode 49 was Relationships 101. So this is 201, some do's and don'ts, and some questions to ask yourself as you're starting a relationship, or you've been in a relationship, but it doesn't seem to be going quite the way you think it should be going. Some questions to ask yourself that can help be guidelines to what you need to do next. So, Morgan, do you want to start off? I started off with a short list and it actually turned into a long list.
Yeah, I think I'd ask you, what do you think is like the most important, or the, at least the first thing that's most important to identify when you're thinking about a relationship?
Great question. And I think the question is, do I feel safe? Okay. And I don't mean, do you feel like your life is in danger? Do I feel like this person isn't going to kill me? But do I feel safe being myself?
Mm-hmm.
And safety comes from healthy boundaries. And we've talked about boundaries. And I think boundaries are extremely important because it was episode number 4 for those of you who need the reference. Safety comes from healthy boundaries and knowing where the line is drawn and keeping yourself within the boundary or within the line and making sure that people know what that line is. And make sure that when they cross it, that they hear about it and not 10 weeks later or 10 months later, but they hear about it right away. And it doesn't have to be nasty. It just has to be brought up. I mean, safety is defined differently by different people, but to be safe, we have to trust ourselves. We have to trust our intuition and we have to trust our partners. If we're always second guessing ourselves, you know, what is this person going to do next? Am I going to hear from them? Are they going to follow up? Do they do what they say what they do? Do we clearly outline within reasons what we accept and don't accept in other people's behaviors and from ourselves? And if they don't behave in that way, do you make them know? Do you bring it up to them, in other words, or do you just let it go by? Because I think that when people start letting things go by, they don't feel safe to bring it up. So, you know, do I feel safe to speak about something that bothers me? Do I stay current with my issues and encourage my partner to bring up the problems also, so that you're not stamp collecting? Now, stamp collecting to me is one of the most vile human patterns known to man, and it will for sure destroy relationships. And stamp collecting was in a book by Eric Byrne, Dr. Eric Byrne, years ago. I mean, we're talking ancient history here. His book was called Games People Play, and he talks about stamp collecting. And stamp collecting is one of those things where somebody does something, you let it go by. You don't say anything. And then it happens again, or something else happens, and you let that go by. And again. And so what the person does is every time there's a transgression, they put a little stamp in their book. When the book is full, they cash in the book. They cash in their stamps, which means that, you know, later on, you hear about everything that you've done wrong for the last 2 years, which is totally unfair to the person who's transgressing. And to me, it demonstrates that the person who's collecting the stamps doesn't feel safe enough to bring up what it is that they're doing.
You know, that reminds me of, to make a kind of a corporate analogy, maybe some people yes. get this if they work in corporate a lot, is a lot of, not always, but a lot of times, emphasis is placed on feedback, on providing feedback
yes.
to other people, your coworkers, your subordinates, supervisors, so that they have an understanding of how they're doing. And it's encouraged to be provided timely, and to not make it personal about the person, but about the behavior.
Right. Good.
And whether it's constructive or positive feedback, that you're giving some guidance, like, that was really great, do more of that. Or, you know, this isn't working for me, or this is creating this problem. How can we address this?
Right.
So, yeah. So I think I relate this to feedback.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a great way to put it. It doesn't have to be as pedantic as that, or as, I don't know what the word would be, stilted, you know, do you know what I mean? But I think it works really well in relationships. And I think that giving your partner feedback, positive feedback, oh, I really like how you look today, or I like how you did that, or, you know, sometimes it's really easy for us move away from to just point out everything that they did wrong. Right. That's not very healthy either. So I think that that's a good way to approach it, Morgan, is to go, okay, so just remember, it's not failure, it's only feedback. And to also give encouragement to your partner. You know, sometimes people are really internally referenced. They don't need the feedback, and oftentimes they don't want it, and it's not welcome. But on the other hand, some people are very externally referenced in certain contexts, and they need that feedback. Now, it makes them feel uncomfortable if they don't know how they're doing, according to their partner. So I think that's an important factor. All right. So this is one that you brought up, and that was, do I know what I want? And you had some pretty good ideas about this.
Yeah, I think with knowing what you want is first being honest with yourself and saying, you know, what's the reason that I am seeking a relationship? Is it because I want someone to spend time with? Is it because I want a temporary fun companion? Is it because I'm seeking a long-term committed, like, relationship, perhaps marriage? Whatever it is, be honest with yourself about what that is, and then also be honest with the other person about what that is. Because if you're looking for something that's temporary, or are you maybe long-term, but you have no desire to make a marriage commitment, for example, and the other person does, I think that you're going to run into problems if you pursue a relationship with somebody without those objectives lining up.
Right.
With them. And so that's one of the things that really comes to mind for me, is be honest with yourself, be honest with the other person. So then they have the opportunity to make a decision. It's like, nah, it's not what I'm looking for. Or, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm looking for right now too. Great. I think it's easier to progress when you have that alignment And then also, are you, and I think this ties in with the move away from, move towards meta program, is, are you getting into wanting a relationship to avoid something? Like, I don't want to be alone, versus you're getting into relationship for some other kind of reason that you want to move towards. Like, I want to start a family, or I want to experience X, Y, and Z with someone else. I think that's another one that comes up. And if it's something that you're trying to not have happen, you're getting in a relationship to avoid something, I don't know that that always is going to work out well. No. What do you think?
No, I think that, you know, one of the things I notice over the years, people will, they're lonely. And to me, loneliness is feedback that you need to change something about yourself. There's something in your world not working. It's not about wanting someone in your life to complete you, or wanting someone in your life because that'll fill a void. You want to learn how to fill that void by yourself, for yourself. Then a partner just adds that much more to it. So it's a positive and not a negative. If you're always looking for someone to complete you, if you have two people that aren't whole people, you'll never have 100%. The second thing I wanted to mention in this, and this is something that I get after sometimes, people have this two-page list of criteria that they want in a partner. And the problem is that no person on the earth exists that fills all of those criteria. And people will say, well, okay, then I'll say, give me five things. Give me five things that have to be there in order for them to be right for you. And that changes it a little bit, because it's not about a list of criteria. You know, they have to be friendly, they like dogs, all that kind of stuff, which in some respects sometimes is important. But I think that people, if you ask yourself, what is it about this person that I like, or I would like, that instead of going for a list of values, I used to say, well, if they have the same values, that should work. But you know what? People that can have the same values and do very different behaviors. And I started to discover this in my dating years, when I would say, oh, well, I want somebody who's into personal growth. Well, I discovered there are a lot of people into personal growth, just not the personal growth that I like. So it didn't feel comfortable. You know, at that time, it didn't feel comfortable with me. And I began to understand, oh, just because people have the same values does not mean that they have the same behaviors. And those behaviors could be something that could be a problem for you going forward. So asking yourself, okay, what do I like about this particular person? Instead of looking at a spreadsheet and going, well, do they tick off all the things? You know, it's just like HGTV, right? So you have three people, you have three houses. Of course, I know this is fabricated, but I know a lot of real estate agents will confirm this for me, is that you get a list of criteria for a house, you go and look for a house, and they'll buy a house and it didn't even meet all their criteria, but they like the house. You know, sometimes we end up with partners, not because they they ticked off a lot of boxes, but because it just worked for some reason. It was just right for them. Right. And even though there were a lot of differences, maybe, and even personality or the things that they like, it just worked. And so there's nothing about a spreadsheet or anything scientific about that. It's just what it is. So I think that's a really good question to ask yourself, you know, what do I want? And then what do I like about this person? And look at some of the positive things. Now, I have another question for us to ask, and that is, am I having fun? When I start, you know, when I'm starting to date people, and I'm married, I've been with my husband for 15 years, but I used to, when I was in the dating pool, so to speak, there were partners or there were dates that I had just a fabulous time. And there were dates that it was just really difficult. And is it like sandpaper rubbing together, or is it just take a step and then drag this person? There's so many scenarios that I can talk about. But the basic question is, am I having fun? Or is it hard? Is it work? are you always second guessing what this person is going to do, going to say? Are you saying the right thing? Okay, that makes it unsafe. You go back to question number one. I don't think this in the long run is going to work. It's really interesting because I'm coaching this one guy. He's an older man. His wife passed away from cancer a couple of years ago. And he started dating this woman off of a dating group. And he's a very positive guy. He's very into being encouraging. And he wrote this text to her one day saying, wow, congratulations, you really, it was some text that she sent him. Congratulations, you really proved your ability to handle this. Now, I wouldn't have taken that, you know, but she had a fit. And so I talked him off of that ledge. But 3 months down the road, when we were meeting for a session, he goes, well, we're not together anymore. And I said, does this surprise you? And he goes, no. So that's the thing. He said it was always this constant, am I going to say the right thing or do the right thing? I said, you don't feel safe in the relationship if you're always guessing what is the right thing to say. And what are we going to do when you decide on something you want to do? Is it hard to decide? Is it easy? Is it fun? And then if it's not, then, you know, move on. Yeah. All right. Anything to add about that?
Well, I think these first several ones we've discussed, something that is in the background or is the foundation for that is something that I think we discuss a lot in NLP. And it's all questions, right? It's like, I feel safe? What do I want? Am I having fun? And that's like kind of an awareness. I think a lot of times people will go into a relationship and they won't ask themselves these kinds of questions. They just sort of shoot off the hip, so to speak.
Right.
And instead of really kind of becoming introspective and thinking about their reasons, you know, their values, what's the experience that they're having, what do they want to have? That sort of awareness that I find that NLP helps build
right.
When you take it, because we ask so many questions in the processes and the concepts that we discuss. So I think that if you have some training in NLP, you're probably more likely to ask these kinds of questions.
Right. Yeah, that's so good, Morgan. And I thought of something else along with the fun question, which was in this list that somehow got misplaced, was, am I having the kind of experience I want to have in a relationship? Is this, back to your question, is this what I want? But what's different about that question than the way you presented it is, I am in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only in the moment, because here's the thing. I think too many people, and I know this pattern because I did it for a long time, was to meet someone and then immediately project into the future everything that was going to happen. And so we weren't being in the present. We weren't paying attention to what was going on in the present that may have given us red flags that came up later. And then people get hurt. You know, our feelings get hurt. We end up breaking up. It represents a loss to us, you know, or a failure. Of course, you know, in NLP, we don't have failure, just feedback. However, sometimes it doesn't feel that way. And I just think that if you ask yourself, am I having the kind of experience that I want to have, that puts it all in the present. And then that's how you build a long-term relationship, is a bunch of presents strung together into long-term, not long-term way out into the future and not paying attention to what's going on in the present. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that. But yes, NLP encourages us to ask questions about our experience rather than to just simply, you know, have a list, 2-page list of criteria.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what else?
Okay. So here's another one. And I find this very prevalent in people who are in personal growth or in self-improvement or into NLP or that sort of thing. And the question here is, am I being a therapist to my partner? Okay. And my answer to this is no, you better not be, because that to me is just a recipe for disaster. First of all, relationships offer a tremendous opportunity to grow emotionally and spiritually. In fact, I believe, and this is my own personal belief, that all relationships are spiritual relationships. They're all given to us or created by us for us to grow. But it's not my job to raise this person, to be a coach to this person, or to be a therapist to this person, unless they ask. And I hear people that I coach who are NLP students, they'll say, well, I could run this process on them. And I go, yeah, no. If they want a process, then you can say to them, look, if this is a big enough problem, why don't you talk to Susan or talk to somebody else? But don't be a therapist to your partner. And people also grow at different times. And you may be in an emotional growth spurt. And that's what I mean, emotionally growing or spiritually growing. And your partner may not. That does not mean that you have a bad relationship. It just means that it's not their time to grow. I think it's more helpful to know your partners and your meta programs. You know, what do they sort for? Are they internal and external? Where they're internal and external? Where they're move away from, move towards? What do they want? What are some of their high criteria? Are they options and procedure? Of course, all of these are highly contextual, but knowing them, I think it's extremely important in creating the kind of experience you want. My husband is a high activity sort. I'm a high play sort. So he's a go-go-do-do type of guy. I'm a place, go to some place. I like places. And they have to be the right place. They can't be just be any place. So we have to choose carefully, you know, where we go on vacation to make sure there's plenty of things to do for him. And it's the right place for me. You know, we're both people sorts, but he has a higher people sort than I am. And so it's got to have people for him to see also. But I think knowing people's meta programs, especially the motivation traits, allows you to understand why a person does what they do. Then let them discover a better way by themselves. Just remember, they're not your kids. You know, I used to say, it's not your job to raise your parents. It's after your kids are adults, they're adults. They're not your kids anymore. Not your, you know, you're done. So I just want to say that don't make your relationship a therapy session.
Sound advice.
Sound advice. Yes. Okay. So you may have something to say about this next one. Learn that highly refined skill of going to second position. Now, people in NLP will understand this, the other position. What that means is to be able to stand in another person's energy or shoes, as they say, and really get it from their point of view, not project your point of view into them, which is what a lot of people do, but really get what it looks like from their point of view and what it sounds like from their point of view. It gets you a lot more tolerance, gives you a lot more flexibility in how to deal with them if it, there's a particular problem.
Yeah, I've always related that skill, the second position skill, to empathy.
Yes.
As I guess the structure of, at least in part, of empathy, although there's more to it than that. But that's extremely helpful in any kind of relationship, whether it's professional or a personal life. Yeah. And I think it's also a really valuable skill, this concept of second position, especially when it comes to forgiveness.
Yes.
And I think if you're in any kind of relationship with someone, there's going to be a moment where they're not going to meet your expectations or standards. And they may even intentionally or unintentionally violate some of your values. And in that, the understanding that you get from being able to go second position and not, you know, validate what they did or said, but to understand it and why they did that is very, very helpful for creating that opportunity to forgive, if that is what you want.
Right. Yeah. Remembering that forgiving is forgiving your expectations of their behavior, not condoning, as you said before. In conjunction with this, checking your expectations at the door. I think that unmet expectations and unrealistic expectations devastate more relationships than any other characteristic. People build up these huge ideas about who this person is and what they are. And people are human. Everybody's human. And people do human things. We do it. They do it. So just let it go. In fact, I've called people when I've coached people on the expectations they have for this other person. And they'll say, and in all honesty, I've got to tell our listening audience, I've done the same thing. And I was called on it only once. And I'll never do it again. And that was, well, if it were me, I'd do it this way. And what I got, it was from a coach. And she said, well, they're not you, Susan, and they did something different. And I'll never forget that. People behave and act according to their criteria, not yours. Just because you would do it does not make it a sound behavior or anything for someone else. So just because you would do it doesn't mean they'll do it. Just check that expectation at the door and let them be human. After all, you are too. Now, I wanted to just say a little bit about getting involved with people who lie, deceive, or do drugs or heavy alcohol. And I know that there are people out there that are married or in relationships with drug addicts. And there are a lot of people out there that are rescuers. First of all, going back to the therapist thing, if you're not a therapist, you don't need to be in a relationship with someone you're trying to rescue, number one. Second, everything a person does as an addict is in first position. They do everything for them, even though you may benefit, but and lying and deceiving are never acceptable. It isn't. They are unsafe people. I have been in relationships where I've been belittled and I let it go. And I think that the best way to handle it is get healthy enough for yourself that behavior would not, and when I talk about that behavior, I mean drugs, lying, deception, alcohol, and I mean heavy alcohol. I mean, people, you know, drink. I have friends that do cocktail hour every day, and that's fine. I mean, I'm talking about people who are really, alcohol is their, you know, number one priority. They have a relationship with alcohol. They do not have a relationship with you. You cannot be in a relationship with someone who has a relationship with alcohol or drugs. And I know that's really hard, but it's the truth. And ask any alcohol or drug addiction counselor, they'll tell you the same thing. Yeah. So yeah, be aware of people who are belittling to you, because I think that eventually that starts to wear you down, where how you feel about yourself. And then, of course, it's not safe. So,
yeah.
All right. You know,
I have a thought on this as well. You know, and people who have these experiences where they are, you know, have an addiction to something, and a lot of times they move through it, right? They get, they recover, they move past it. And that's wonderful, obviously. And you may find out of that. And I don't want to say if they have that in their history to have that be a deal killer. I would just simply say, be careful.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they may have dealt with enough issues to get over the actual, you know, like addiction or problem that they had, but they didn't fully deal with some of the things that created that thing. And yeah. Again, it's not like you've had addiction, I'm sorry. But be careful. Just be more attuned to potential warning signs to make sure that they have made the changes that they really needed to make and that they said they've made.
Right. And I think you're referring more to starting a relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Starting a relationship with someone like that. Yeah. Good. All right. So next one. Remember that it takes 90 days for the real person to emerge, or the shadows to emerge. And to me, this is where the rubber meets the road. When the hiccups start, can you handle them? The early on conflicts after 90 days, are there something that you can deal with? Can you work these out? Does your partner have the proclivity to want to work them out in a reasonable manner? Do you talk about things? Because I think that there has to be a give and take, or is it just one-sided? These are the kinds of things to pay attention to. And I think it all goes back to, am I having the kind of experience that I want?
Mm-hmm.
One of the people that I've been coaching, well, he started asking him, we talked about, what kind of experience do you want when you're with this person? And so he got very specific about that. And then we were talking after he broke up with this one woman and started dating someone new. And he said, it's so different because there's a give and take. That's the kind of thing I wanted, was there was a give and take. And with this other person, it just seemed to be one-sided. So just remember that question, is this the kind of experience that I want? You have to know what that is up front, obviously. But when you get there, then you can ask that question and see, you have some point of comparison. All right. Then the next one, we're almost done here. Are you projecting? Now, this one, or am I projecting? Seeing something in a communication or behavior that isn't there, misinterpreting a communication as having a meaning without checking it out first. This is where miscommunications happen, because we think that the meaning of someone's communication is real without really checking out. Knowing in NLP, we learned that all communication is deleted, generalized, and distorted. I would be highly curious about, if someone says something, what exactly does that mean? And don't do it in, well, what does that mean? You know, just say, hey, what are you meaning by that? Or you can be a little softer on the edges when you bring it up, just to find out whether, in fact, what you think they said is actually what they said. So I think that that's probably a good one to ask yourself, am I projecting? Then the last one is, am I doing my own work? Which means that, is this something that I can solve in myself? And I have found over the years, a lot of problems that I've had with my partners and my husband are things that I can just, they're just mild annoyances and disturbances, which can be anchored by simple collapsed reality and let it go and move on. Because it's really interesting, Morgan, and I don't know whether you've found this to be true or not, but I found that when there's conflict between my husband and I, and I'm having a lot of problems with him, it's because of my perception, not because of he's such a bad person. And so if I change my perception, and NLP is all about changing perception, we have a technology that is just brilliantly conceived in anchoring, conflict resolution, reframing, those types of submodalities, those types of things that can allow us to really shift our perception of something so that people actually are fun to be with and there really isn't a problem there, because I'm manufacturing the problem.
Right.
And if there are things that you're not going to change in the person, and I'm talking about just little things like leaving your socks on the bedroom floor or leaving your shoes in the living room. These are things that in the story of love and life, 100 years from now, we're not going to make that much different. And I can go around and just get really upset about everything that's out of place, or I can just change it myself and pick it up and move on. And then I'm a happier person, and so is he. So I think that doing your own work is a key to making sure that you have harmony in yourself, which means that you'll have harmony in your relationships. So anything about that?
I have had the experience of changing something in myself to then have the other person or the situation seemingly change.
Yeah, isn't that
amazing? As a result of that. Yeah, it is. It's really, it's happened several times, and it's always very, very interesting to observe, because the idea is that natural tendency is that, well, I've got to change what the other person is doing, right?
Or thinking. Yes.
And I don't know that that's not necessarily always not an answer, but it almost, like, when you get the result, when you change something yourself, and then it just, whatever the situation was, just kind of clears up. It almost feels like you're cheating or something.
I've never felt that way, Morgan. I've always been like, very happy when the problem disappears, believe me.
Like, that was really easy.
Yeah, so. I know. I know. And that's, I think, one of the things is back to that. Do I feel safe? Do I know what I want? Am I having fun, or am I having the kind of experience that I want? All of those come down to, am I happy with myself? Do you know what I mean? It's right. People expect other people to make them happy. Now, notice that none of my questions say, am I happy? Because I don't believe anybody can make anybody else happy. I believe that's your job. And I used to have a trainer that used to say, you can never become happy. You can only remember how to be happy. So you can think about that one for a while. But I think that understanding what kind of relationship you want, what kind of experience you want in a relationship, and then judging what you're having based on that little description can go a long way in you having some really great, great relationships. And if you take enough days in a relationship like that, you'll have a long-term relationship. You can't, you don't go into a relationship thinking that it's going to be long-term, because you only have today. And I didn't ever expect to be with my partner, my husband, as long as I have. And then all of a sudden, we were figuring it out. My gosh, we've been together 15 years. That's a long time. And I, for me, especially. And it meant that there were a lot of changes. I had to let go of a lot of things that I wasn't going to change in him. And we both work on it every day, things that have to be addressed, and sometimes every day. But you keep doing that. And guess what? It can be a really rewarding experience, and both people get a lot out of it from that. So let's go ahead.
You mentioned, you said, I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something about you said, I don't believe relationships are to make you happy. Something like that.
No, I don't believe relationships can make you happy. I don't believe that another person can make you happy. I believe that you can create your own happiness by the things you say and do. Do you feel safe? Am I having the kind of experience that I want? Am I having fun? Do I know what I want? You know, do I know who I am? Am I doing my own work? Am I with the right people, for one thing? Of course, if you're a rescuer, you need to maybe rescue yourself and not worry about anybody else.
That one made me think that what we believe about relationships is probably really important. So you might want to do like sort of a self assessment about, what do I believe about relationships?
Yeah.
And see if something like, because I'm assuming there's probably some people out there that do think that, you know, I'll get a relationship and then I'll be happy.
And then I'll be happy. Mm-mm, yeah. It doesn't work that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good thing, Morgan, is to look at your beliefs around relationships. We might do a relationships 301.
what do I believe about relationships?
Yeah. That's good. So anyway, let's go ahead and do a recap here. Remember that the relationship characteristics, some of the questions that you want to ask yourself, and I've been reminding you that throughout the podcast, do I feel safe? Does my partner feel safe? This is about letting them be their own person. Do you feel safe bringing things up? Do you feel safe being yourself? That those are very, very important characteristics. And I think number one, do you know what you want and what's the driving reason, and being honest with yourself about what you want and being honest to them about what you want. And then, am I having the kind of experience I want? Am I having fun? Is it hard? Is it work? Am I always second guessing something, which makes, of course, it not safe? Then am I being a therapist with my partner? You know, has my relationship become a therapy session, which I don't think that's your job. And I don't think that's anybody's job unless they're paying you. So I think that you ought to let people grow at their own pace, let you grow at your own pace. And it's better to know your partner's meta programs. Then that highly refined skill of going second position, empathy, as Morgan says, is a great skill to have, to see it from another person's point of view and really get why they do something, because they're going to do things that don't necessarily meet with your expectations or values. And of course, the hard point, am I involved with someone who lies, deceits, does drugs or heavy alcohol, who is an addict? And remembering they only do first position, or they only do things for themselves. I know this is really difficult for some people to understand, but none of these behaviors are acceptable. If you want a real relationship, that's not the place to look for one. Make sure that you check your expectations at the door. Am I reacting to expectations or unreal expectations? And then let them be their own person. This goes back to the safety issue. And do you feel okay with being your own person? Can you pursue your own friendships and your own, you know, my husband loves cycling. I love photography. I support him in his cycling, and he does race car driving or helps someone who does race car. He doesn't do it anymore. But, you know, he goes for weekends and he cruises with the race cars, or he goes on cycling trips. And it doesn't do my relationship any good to complain about him being gone. He just likes to go. He's a high activity sort. And quite honestly, I think it's been very good for our relationship for me to have time by myself. So I've learned to appreciate that. And then remember that it takes 90 days for the real person to emerge, and notice how you know, can I handle the hiccups that come in, and can I communicate them easily, or do I feel unsafe about bringing up, you know, and talking about issues? Are you projecting, or am I projecting? Am I seeing someone do something and I'm making a meaning up about it and not really having the true communication, understanding the true communication? And then finally, could I do my own work around this? Can I anchor this? Can I do a conflict resolution? Morgan also stated how changing something in ourselves oftentimes will change it in our partner. But does it really? I can't really address that, but I can tell you it does change my perception, which of course is our reality. So I just wanted to thank everyone for listening to the podcast, and thank Morgan for helping me. And I want to just make a comment about, I'm going to be offering my Art and Skill or the Presentation Academy coming up after the first of the year. So if that's of interest to you, you have a master practitioner certification from somewhere in the world, and you would like to learn how to use that, use the skills of NLP to make accelerated learning for students as a trainer or presenter, then just let me know. You can get a hold of me through susan@nlptrainingconcepts.com, or of course, my phone number's on the website. You can leave a message, and would love to hear your feedback. We have the Brain Language Group on Facebook. We have the Brain Language Group on LinkedIn, I believe, still, Morgan, right?
Right.
And so you can find us wherever people in NLP hang out. So thank you all very much. Hope you're having a great summer. Stay cool if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you for listening to the Brain Language Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes or your favorite listening platform to keep up with our newest episode. Be sure to visit our website, www.nlptrainingconcepts.com, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter by searching NLP Training Concepts to keep up with free resources, upcoming training, and fantastic content. Thank you for joining us and taking our minds to the next level. We'll see you next time.